from cigars.
Marge McDouche.
Challenge.
Another bite.
Ready, Puff Eddie. On line number four, this is a psycho shower.
Oh, so on a roll. Hey, I dropped it. All the hoes in this house. Hey, I got the soap. Hey, soap on a rope. Hey, come on, bend over, girl.
Oh, God damn, that is cold. Did you do that for the Eddie and Domo? I'm gonna kick your ass. You, wait till I get out of here. I'm f***ing ow.
Now for something completely different.
Happy hour. Happy hour.
It's time for Hoppy in the morning.
What's up? This is Happy Hour. I am your host, Ryan Hoppy, and on the phone line, this man and the show that he had every morning is the reason I'm in radio. From the legendary Eddie and Jobo morning show on B96 and K-Hits, and also from the Eddie and Hannah B show currently on in the Chicagoland area, the one and only Eddie Volkman is on Hoppy Hour. What's up, Eddie?
What's up, Ryan? Great to talk to you again, man. It's been a while. I see your activity on social media and stuff, but we don't get to actually talk very much, so thank you for having me on.
Of course, Eddie. It's weird how influential your show was for me. So my dad would mow my grandpa's lawn every Saturday. My dad was from Six Corners in Chicago off of Cumberland, and every Saturday we'd go through the toll road, and I saw your billboard in like 2004, because I never had TV growing up. I didn't have TV during 9/11 because my mom just was very religious and didn't want me to see that. So I got all my information through the radio, and my years were like Rowan Gary was what my mom would have on when she would pick me up from school. But the very first radio show that I heard that made me realize I wanted to do funny radio was the Eddie and Jobo show. And that was because you guys had a billboard in like 2004 where you guys were posing all wacky. And I'm like, I got to check out this show. And I'm telling you, the first day I heard it, it was when the Meet the Fockers movie came out, and you did a Marge McDouche prank call, or Mrs. Pilafuff, one of the two, to a movie theater because you were mad that they had that movie out there. And it's some of the greatest radio I've ever heard.
Well, I can't believe they were putting a movie out with that name. That's disgusting.
Mrs. Pilafuff, it's Fockers.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like a naughty word. I'm going to have to call your manager.
Oh, boy, she was Karen before there were Karens.
How did you come up with that character?
You know, this is really strange. There was an actual woman named April Pilafuff, not Pillow Fluff, but like P-I-L-I-F-U-F. And we heard her one time. She won some money back when radio stations gave away money on B96, maybe like $500, and a half hour later won $1,000 from WLS. So she had no station loyalty. She lived out in the suburbs, we don't know where, and so she really didn't know what station she was listening to. She just knew when the contests were. We call those people prize pigs.
Yes,
because they're, you know, they just call for the prizes. So she didn't really know the lineup, so we comedically made her get everything wrong. You know, she just wanted to win. She didn't know where she was calling.
Is this the Freddie and Blow Joe show?
And then
my daughter needs tickets to see the Instincts.
You know, she didn't even know the band names, but she did everything for her beloved daughter. And she was, and then when she didn't get her way, it was always, I'm going to have to call your manager. Then when the whole Karen phenomenon, it started hitting, I'm going, wait a minute. They stole that idea. But you know what? About 10 things we did on the radio back in those days are still done by people all over the country. I don't know if you can copyright those things or what, but.
Eddie, you know. I want to ask you about this. I didn't realize this. So you know this. I've been in Tampa radio for 9 years now. And obviously the name down here, love or hate him, the name's Bubba the Love Sponge. He's sort of fallen off the map, but he made a huge name here. One time somebody described it as Pepsi, Coca-Cola, and Bubba were like the three biggest things in Tampa radio. And I was listening to your interview with the B96 Morning Show 3-4 weeks ago, and that was a great interview. I didn't realize that Bubba took No Panties Thursday from you guys.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, we were honored. That was it. And the whole concept, even when we were doing it for years, people would complain because they said, that's disgusting. But we said, it's like a no underwear thing for men and women. But, you know, it just had a better ring to it. You know, nobody wants to hear about your boxers. So, yeah, and a few people did some of those things. Because he was the night jock for a while on B96, not very long.
Yeah.
I remember the funny story about him was he got an endorsement deal with Weight Watchers because he was a big guy, and they sent him a week's worth of food, and he ate it all the first day. It doesn't work that way. It's not fat-dissolving type food. It's like metered, measured food. So, anyway. Is he still on the radio there?
He does brokered radio down here. I actually made him really mad the other day. I was in a mood to kind of like bust balls because that's what you do in Tampa radio. And I tweeted out, there's nobody who's better at living in the past than Bubba the Love Sponge. And he took a screenshot of a DM I sent him like when I was unemployed like 7 months ago saying, hey, would you want to air my podcast on Bubba Army Radio? And he's like, this you? And I'm like, you really didn't burn me. I just asked for a job and I'm just busting balls. Because he's one of those cats, same with other people I've worked with in Tampa, they have no self sense of humor. They're able to rip into everybody else, Eddie. And that's what I always liked about you and Joba was that you guys were... You were able to take a joke. I don't like the radio hosts that rip into everybody else, but then you can't do the same to them.
Right, and then they come back. You know that. You know what that is? That's just basically narcissism. And so, if you can't make fun of yourself, I've worked. You know, actually, there's a lot of people like that. It's what drives them to be in radio or in showbiz in general. So, I mean, you've met celebrities who are jerks and other ones who are just real down to earth, like Will Ferrell, nicest guy, and he said, I know I have a kind of style of humor that's not everybody's cup of tea. If you don't like it, I'm fine with that. You know, whereas other people are like, well, then you don't know comedy. You know, so there's no reason to be a jerk. So,
well,
and by the way, speaking of living in the past, I want to thank you for acknowledging the Eddie and Hannah show.
Yeah.
Because we've been together 2 years. One tenth the time, well, not even a tenth the time Jobo and I were, but we do promotions, we do appearances, and some people don't know we're coming, and the minute they see me, they're going, Eddie and Jobo! You know, and I go, no, actually, Eddie and Hannah, and she takes it in stride, and I realize that, and I'm always into moving forward. That said, Carol O'Connor will always be Archie Bunker, no matter how long. In the heat of the night TV show, you know, where he was a cop. And so she accepts that, and I do too. But just like Jobo and I did, we get out to as many places and meet and shake hands. And people that meet Hannah love her. I mean, I'm more than they like me or Jobo. She's just an incredibly personable, caring, empathetic person. And she's just adorable to people, so that once they hear her, they travel 80 miles to get to come to one of our remotes. And if it was just me doing it, they wouldn't. I mean, other people would, but the Hannah fan club is growing rapidly.
Yeah, and I saw the post you made where you had the joke about the UAI, United Auto Insurance, commercials airing at the same time as Hannah B. being on WGN.
Right, right. And when I first, you know, when they did the, well, we'll probably talk about this, when we reunited on B96
yeah.
on April 1st, when I first got the news we were going to do this, I posted about it. And I said, don't worry, Hannah, I'm not leaving you for my ex. So,
what is your relationship like with Jobo?
Oh, it's great. I mean, we did that show Friday night.
How did that go?
Oh, it was epic. I mean, all these bands that were played back then that a lot of people don't know, Color Me Bad, Rob Bass, I think people know It Takes Two to Make a Thing Go Right.
Yeah.
In fact, there are probably a lot of songs people said, I didn't know they sang it, but Sweet Sensation, The Cover Girls, TKA, George Lamond, and The Jets, which that's a band that doesn't normally come to these big events, you know, these multi-act shows. But Jobo and I had already talked. People were under the mistaken idea that we were in some feud and that we hated each other, partly because I got pretty mad when we were offered over $1 million each to do mornings on WLS FM back around 2014. And Jobo, by diagnosis and self-admit, he's bipolar. And it was a kind of a classic thing because he accepted the job and then he said he didn't want to do it. And he went back and forth for weeks and literally months and then finally accepted. And I was kind of in a holding pattern because otherwise I would have been looking to do something else. And so he finally said yes, and then over the weekend, before we were supposed to start, gave an emphatic, no, I just don't want to do it. And so, that's, you know, I said I would shovel elephant poop for $1 million, you know, who wouldn't? And so I was a little mad about that, and the fact that he went back and forth so much. But that doesn't last long. We were like a, you know, we had a 20 to 25 years together. But I have the right to get a little miffed about it, and then I had to readjust my life a bit. But you know, what is that? That's, first of all, it was over 10 years ago, and secondly, so what? You know, we did well enough at B96 that I actually didn't need a $1 million job. I just wanted it. And I liked being on the air still. And they didn't want one without the other. And that was, you know, that kind of bothered me too, because I thought I've done a pretty good show on my own, and you guys ought to give me a shot. But they didn't. So yeah, I was a little miffed about that. But we haven't been fighting. He doesn't talk to many people at all. We literally live 160 miles apart from each other, and we live different lifestyles. I have a daughter in cheer and swim and all this, and he's unmarried and no kids. So even when we work together, we went out to lunch and did all kinds of things together, but on weekends we didn't really hang out because we had our own things to do. So there was no bitterness or anything. And so with that in mind, we arranged our opening appearance on stage to come from the opposite sides of the stage and give each other a big hug. So, you know, whatever people wanted to think, they thought, oh, that's so nice, they like each other again. The fact is, we never didn't like each other. So
back then, what was the way of communicating about the morning show? Because on various radio shows I've worked on, there's like a group text, or you send DMs on Instagram, or there's email. When you guys first began the show until it ended, how would you and Jobo talk during the day about planning for the next day's show? Would you call each other on the phone? How did you guys do it back then?
When they first paired us together, Jobo lived in Wheeling, Illinois, the northern northwest suburbs, and I lived in Northbrook, Illinois, which is almost adjacent to Wheeling, except for a big forest preserve in between the two. So we each had a good 30 to 45 minute drive into the station. So we had the old cell phones that were locked in your car, you know, like on the dash. And we would call each other on the way home from the show each day and talk about what we did, what we could do better. And basically, we were the only two. While we were on the air, we would talk to the producers. You know, there's like 5 to 7 people that put the show together. You know, remember producers?
Yeah.
Then going in the next morning, 3 a.m., we could call each other and say, hey, I just heard this, and I was thinking about this, and we'd have a whole plan by the time we arrived at the studios downtown. But subsequently, when we both moved downtown and we eventually ended up living in the same condo building, he was like 3 floors below me, and as he liked to say on the air, yes, folks, Eddie's unit is twice the size of mine. So we would just see each other because we would either walk home or cab or Uber or whatever it was at the time, and have the same conversation, but just not on the phone. And because we had those themed days, like Confession Wednesday,
yeah,
and No Panties, yeah, Thursday, the preparation wasn't difficult because we would just decide what theme we would have for Confession Wednesday, and then the calls would be the content. So it's not like we had to prepare a ton of content because we had such an active listener base that the callers were the show.
Yeah, and the one segment, I was thinking about your show when I was driving to this interview today, the one that's really underrated was the 620 crime report, suburban crime report. I used to be taking I used to be taking a bath, or I'd be taking a shower, and I'd have my dad in the other room, and we would listen to all the wacky things that would go on. It was the best.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, that was, I've actually considered doing that on my stations now because, that came up in the early 90s when a lot of people don't think that Chicago is as violent as it's ever been. The early 90s with the crack wars and the gangs were almost worse than they are now. And, you know, you hear Chicago's murder rate the worst in 20 years. And I go, or 25 or 30 years. And I go, yeah, the 90s. And so the idea was crime in the city was always a shooting and some kind of murder and stuff. Crimes in the suburbs, at least then, were stolen lawn flamingos and stuff like that. And so, sorry, my wife is driving up next to me.
You're good.
It was funnier because they were goofy crimes, but now, you know, there's like murder in the suburbs. So, yeah, it's harder to find silly crimes.
Now, I listened to you in the era that you guys were playing hip hop, and it's pretty much what got me into hip hop was B96 and 2004, 5, 6, 7, 8 ish. How much did you like, because I know you liked the music in the 80s and 90s, but were you guys a fan of listening to like Ying Yang Twins and Chingy and Ludacris?
Yeah, that was, it added a little extra, you know, some extra fun to the whole.
Yeah.
Because music, you know, there's a lot of schlocky Michael Boltons and stuff that made their way through, which was just not my thing. I liked, you know, we did so many club things that we liked the music that our listeners liked. And, you know, it was funny, when I first got to B96 in the 80s, I was in my 20s. So my friends from high school were still listening to, you know, contemporary hit radio, top 40 or whatever they called it, and they thought, cool, wow, how cool is it that Eddie is on the radio? Then we got in our 30s and they're like, yeah, well, I'm listening to blah blah blah. And then by the time we were in our 40s, they were like, let me ask you something, how can you stand the music you play? And I go, well, you guys don't like it, but your kids do. It's like Michael J. Fox in Back to the Future. I guess you're not ready for that, but your kids are gonna love it. so then it got to the point, 50s, where they didn't even know if I was still on the air or not, because it's just not their cup of tea. So I like, you know, as Jobo said, when we were making a lot of money, something like, I would record, I'd play recorded whale farts on the radio if they, for the money they're paying me.
Yeah, I feel that.
Yeah, I left that up to the music and research guys. So
You know what I noticed, and I know you've talked about it too, is that you guys live such different lives that he was almost like the devil of the show and you were sort of the like angel. You know what I'm saying? Like you guys were so good. He was sort of the almost like heel in like wrestling or villain, and you were like the good guy. And I feel like that's what made it so big.
Yeah, you know, we always tried to take opposites on things. Some of it based on reality. He really did like the Sox. But it wasn't because he thought they were a gritty team or, you know, something about anything about it. It was because he had four brothers that loved the Cubs. So just to piss them off, he liked the White Sox. And I grew up on the North Side, and my dad worked for WGN-TV doing weather. So he got free tickets to the Cubs because they were on WGN-TV. So I went to more Cubs games because, A, geographically closer, and B, I could get in free because of my dad. So on the air, we took opposite sides, and that was a good thing for Chicago because the city does that. Now, as far as on air, when we first got paired together, we had people like Kevin Matthews or Jonathan Brandmeier and Robert Murphy and Z95, Barsky. And they all had a kind of a nasty side. That, and Jobo said, Eddie's funny, but you have to actually get in a little trouble to get noticed in Chicago. You know, you had Steve Dahl's legacy is Disco Demolition.
Yeah.
And Brandmeier pushing a quarter across the bridge and Mancow getting sued. Jobo wanted to be, and he also wanted to get that TMZ kind of question, the prurient interest. You know, he thought like, you know, kind of psychologically things, everything, Freudian things, like sex, food, and cars, things like that. And so you can't go wrong. And dogs, you can't go wrong talking about things like that. And I would then make the humor about it. The cool thing is I grew up with a brother who was, like, not even a year older than I was. So we'd wake up in the summer to, you know, to go do what boys do. And my brother would say, this is what we're going to do. And I'd be like, I'm good. I'll augment whatever it is. So Jobo always had an idea of where he wanted to go. And I said, I can make a joke out of anything. And so it worked into a great partnership. I was doing mornings by myself without Jobo. And then he was the night jock. And I did all these characters and stuff, but I would write out scripts and record the character voice and talk to it.
Yeah.
So I thought, this will be better. I'll give Jobo his half of the script, and he talked to me. Well, he's kind of a scattered guy, so he was never able to do it. It was like, it just didn't work. So out of necessity, we learned improv, basically, for doing Ed Landers.
Yeah.
Or this is the Odin, or any of those things, and just developed a chemistry that I don't know could be duplicated. You know, we were talking about it at this big show Friday night, that those magical days of radio, for one thing, can't be replaced because what is tolerated on air is not the same. And we crossed the line or walked the line a lot. But every character we did, I was telling you about Mrs. Filipov, we actually even used the name. I don't know why she didn't sue us or she just moved away or something. But that was based on a real person that's overprotective of her daughter, like a soccer mom and a Karen as for these days. But Marge McDouche, you know, everybody knows that local shot in a beer bar where there's, you know, sometimes a little old lady who smokes and talks to everybody and thinks she's worldly and she's seen it all. And, you know, but has a good heart. That's why I want to set you up for the love test. But she had, we gave her that whiskey voice. And then Murph with a mullet, you know, like a homophobic softball playing, loudmouth, misogynist kind of guy. And the funny thing is, we never got complaints. Even some of the language we use that you wouldn't use on the radio these days, because they knew we were making fun of that type of person. You know, we even had the overly ecological Maruga made a rare appearance, who always wanted to save the whales with her free pamphlets that were only $6.95 for shipping and handling, and you know, blowing the lid off some of these you know, fake, you know, activist people. So
it was three shows. I never really was that into Drex. Like, I preferred you guys, but I listened to them maybe for 5 minutes, but I would listen to you guys, and I also liked Johnny B. And when I tell people that I was a fan of Man Cow's Morning Madhouse, a lot of people kind of give you kind of a weird look. What's your relationship like with him? Because I personally found him very fascinating and entertaining to listen to. It might have been because I was in middle school when I was listening and it was just really edgy, but there's something about that guy that I find fascinating. I don't know what it is.
I'm friends with him. We don't hang out socially, but we text each other, you know, occasionally, because I understand the beast. It's a podcast, so I can say.
Yeah.
One guy once told me, "You're not enough of an asshole to be a morning man," and I said, "Well, you big doo doo head."
No. Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of true, and you think about it. Ask people that worked with all of these legendary morning guys. There are a lot of people that say they did. I mean, I've worked with a lot of people that worked with Mancow who despise him for the way he kind of treated them that they claim. I was not there, so I don't know. But Jobo had his quirks of his own, and I've worked with other people, so I understand the nature of a kind of a narcissistic, loud, boisterous personality. And you know, that's just who they are. So I don't hate him, but I understand how he rubbed some people wrong. I know a woman that worked with him that won't even talk about it because she's so traumatized. Distraction there. And I find he and his buddy Midge.
Yeah. Love cheese. Yeah.
Ripoli. He's an outstanding producer, and I don't know if he ever got the credit that he deserved, but just like people that worked on our show, the show doesn't fly without somebody really getting stuff, arranging interviews, production values. I mean, that guy made a new parody song every day. I don't know how he was able to do multiple voices and all that, but he ran a tight show, a lot of goofy stuff, and it might be somewhat offensive, but I was listening to it from a radio standpoint and how well it was put together. And he's probably tormented somewhat, but a lot of artists are. So,
yeah, one time I sent him a DM and I asked him if he'd want to call into my podcast, and he goes, "Could I call into your podcast? Yes. Do I want to? I'm not sure." And I went, "That's the most man cow answer ever."
Yeah. That's true. Well, you know, he'll alternately send me GIF of some girl in a thong riding a bicycle, and then a Bible verse. You know, and then 3 days later, a Bible verse.
So, it's fascinating. Yeah, I love his social media presence. It's like a picture of him and like Chris Farley from like 30 years ago, and then it's like then he'll like do AI pictures of his wife, and I'm like, oh man, I bet she loves that.
Yeah, but you know, I talked to him. I even mentioned him on stage Friday night when I was talking about the greatness of the era that we were all celebrating, the 80s and 90s of radio, because people were dependent on it for new music and everything. My 12-year-old daughter wouldn't turn on the radio to save her life, but she's forced to listen in the morning when I drive her to school, and she likes and she pays attention, but it's just not, I mean, the same things, you know, morning shows everywhere are a guy and a girl asking boxers or briefs, and it's just sad.
Yeah.
You know, for one thing, radio, like every other business, is layoffs has caused a lack of talent pool. So there's not a lot of up-and-coming personalities, and if somebody has a great personality and a lot to offer entertainment-wise, the first thing they think is TikTok. You know, they don't say, "I want to go on radio." That's why I'm fortunate to have kind of an old soul in Hannah, because she's good on the radio and she loves the medium of radio, but also is very much into the social media aspect and put it together this whole video about typical Swifties when the night the album came out. She had on Taylor Swift pajamas, Taylor Swift bracelets and everything, a glass of wine, chocolate, and a box of Kleenex. And I don't know if you've seen the video, but it's outstanding, and it's, you know, it's gone viral, and she's, you know, that's the kind of thing she adds. And there's sometimes more views of her videos than there are total listeners to the station.
She's going to be the next big thing.
Yeah, yeah. And partly because she deserves it, and she's a good human, you know. So I wish her all the best, you know, and I told Jobo, I said, I'm doing this because I love it now. I don't need to be working, but what else would I do? My wife even says, you'd be bored. And I think I'm still pretty sharp with the stuff I do. So, you know.
Yeah, and I know, I remember this last time when I interviewed you and I asked you some advice that your dad gave you was that you needed to make Eddie Volkman into a name. I remember you saying that during our last interview.
Yeah, and now people, you know, that knew me, I tell people for 20 years my last name was Anjobo.
Yeah.
So now people say, people that knew my dad on TV, here's my last name. They say, Volkman, is your dad Harry? And I go, you should see my mom. then the rim shot goes off. And funny thing is, my mom never laughed at that joke. But, you know. So.
Was there ever a time where Jobo was sort of crazy that morning and maybe was saying some pretty edgy things and you were sort of like sitting back and you're just sort of like, oh man.
Yeah. Yeah. Part of Jobo's personality, and I know it comes from his mom, bless her heart, she's still hanging in there. She would always suspect the worst of people. You know, if you hear two stories, Jobo would accept the worst one because he thinks people have things to hide. So, and this is just one example, and I don't want Jobo to listen to this and get mad at me, but the morning they found Michael Jordan's father dead on the side of the road.
Yeah.
It turned out to be a random robbery, and they didn't know who he was. But Karen Hand broke in and said, hey, I have some sad news. It is confirmed that it was with Jeffrey Jordan. Was that his dad's name?
I believe so, yeah.
Without missing a beat, Jobo said, oh boy, I guess Michael's gambling debts caught up with him.
Oh my goodness.
And I'm saying, like, wow. You can't do that. And I was kind of horrified, you know, not that, but it was also Jobo. I was like, I don't edit what he says, and I wasn't mad or anything. I was just a little shocked, but you know, I always remember that day, and then it turned out not to be. And so other times he would read the National Enquirer about Michael Jordan having an affair.
Of course,
and, you know, and he would believe every word, and you never know the sources.
Yeah, but so I mean, NBA players, that's sort of their thing. It's like kind of the unspoken thing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's it's sad, but it is what it is.
Yeah. But I mean, this is everyday, you know, someone's missing from work and they had the flu, but it's like, I'll bet I know what happened. You know, and I think, oh, no. So, anyway.
What do you think about the Radio Hall of Fame?
I got to be honest. I would be honored if that ever happened. But I think we had a better chance if we had done the WLS thing and been on Chicago radio for like 10 more years together.
Yeah.
Now I think it's kind of because I vote every year for guys like Mitch Michaels. I mean, I think that guy was. I mean, I listen to him. I love to go up to him because he was working for one of our sister stations, The River. And so he got let go not too long ago, and we were shocked, but it was part of cutbacks like in radio everywhere. But every year when it comes around, I put his name in. And he's one of the few guys, I have a lot of people come up and go, I hope you won't, even last night I was out at watching a band, and a bunch of women in their late 30s or early 40s came up and said, I hope you're not offended, I used to listen to you in high school. I go, not at all. And especially if they still listen on the station I'm on now. I go, why would I be offended? And but with Mitch Michaels, one of the few guys, and Bob Surratt that were still on radio that I could go up and say, I used to listen to you in high school. But with Mitch Michaels, I don't know how old he is. He might have been 23 when I was 17. So, you know,
yeah.
I still could listen to him in high school. He was this guy that got on the radio early in Chicago at a pretty young age. So good for him.
I'm telling you right now, I don't know if I would have gone into radio if it wasn't for your show. Because to me, one of the saddest days, I went to North Carolina every year in November to see my uncle. And I remember I was on my uncle's BlackBerry, and it was early Facebook. And I remember somebody put up Eddie and Jobo are no longer on B96. And that day and Opie and Anthony breaking up were like the two saddest days for my radio. And it's not that I never listened to B96 again, but there was a part of me as a Chicagoan, Eddie, that day, I remember it, and it just sucked.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, they've tried a lot of morning shows since then, but I don't know, you know, corporate seems to make the decision. You ever notice when somebody gets fired or leaves an iHeart station, the replacement usually isn't somebody in the market, it's somebody from iHeartRadio. And same thing with Odyssey. And so, like, 96 Morning Show, they're very nice people. We met them when we went up and did that April 1st on-air bit with them. But one's from Phoenix originally, and one's from Seattle. So, I mean, you can assimilate and all that, but and they're, you know, I don't know how the ratings are. I think they've only been there for 1 month or a little over a month. So it takes a while to get your foothold, but I don't know if they'll catch on or how well they'll do, but I wish them all the luck. But
I think Fred puts on a good show.
Yeah. Well, his ratings show too. He's like, dominant. Because I'm also the program director, I have access to ratings and hour by hour breakdowns and all that. And, he's kicking major butt. So, especially with the departure of Eric and Kathy, who are in the Radio Hall of Fame as a duo themselves.
Yeah.
And then Eric kind of fell from grace a bit. And he said something recently about, I'm returning to Chicago media, but that and everybody started grousing about, how could they let a guy after his, you know, misogyny or whatever he was accused of, back on radio? And I said, he didn't say radio. He said Chicago media. That could be anything. You know,
it really is. Outlets. It's so crazy because everybody that I grew up with, all their moms listened to that show. It's crazy. My aunt, my other aunt, my cousins, everybody listened to that show. And it's so crazy how far he fell. I'm not trying to talk smack, but it's so crazy how they had billboards everywhere in Arlington Heights where I grew up. And then he's not in radio anymore. It's bizarre for me.
Yeah, I laughed because in an article about them one time that was talking about their success, and I don't know if it was the author of the article or what, but somebody said they were successful because they were the mom jeans of radio, and they just dominated. They dominated like 25 to 54 year old women. Because it was not offensive. Jobo and I, you know, we would do things that moms, to this day, people say, we weren't allowed to listen to you in the morning, but we would beg the bus driver to put on Eddie and Jobo. And a lot of it, we weren't really filthy. We weren't doing anything that could have been an FCC fine, but, you know, no panties Thursday. A mom hears that with her 14-year-old daughter. They're not listening to that. And Confession Wednesday, you know, Young MC was a guest on the show, and we go, it's Confession Wednesday, you got to confess something. And he confessed that he was with a woman, and he was not totally clean when he answered the door and shook someone's hand. And
oh, my God.
Some mom hearing that was like, okay, you're not listening to this. You know, so, yeah, I can understand that, but that never happened with Eric and Kathy. So once they were locked in, and they were good. I mean, they told good stories, and they did things like the wedding that was being put together all by sponsors. So one day somebody would donate a diamond ring, the next day somebody would donate something else, and it was a soap opera that people followed along. And hour by hour listening, excuse me, is important, but day to day, getting to come back the next day is very, you know, huge for ratings.
What did you guys, I mean, obviously he was a rival, but what did you guys think about Drex?
Well, I actually hung out with him at a couple of clubs, and he said, you know, that this is all a management game plan, because when he arrived, and the guy was only like, he might be 6 years younger than I am. When he arrived, their whole thing was to talk about how old we were. And we were aged out of the demographic. We were, you know, in our late 40s or so, maybe. And we aged out of the 12 to 35-year-old target audience, even though they were more than happy to have, you know, 25 to 54-year-olds. But so their game plan was to continually attack us. And even my buddy Jabba Joel Murphy.
Yeah.
I was driving to play full court basketball with my guys. And I heard him on the night show celebrating Eddie D's 60th birthday, which didn't happen that long ago in reality. But that night, you know, he was trying to paint me as old. And so they sang happy birthday to me. And I laughed. You know, I said, I understand marketing and going after each other. And the Eddie and Joe are old, Eddie and Joe are old. And Drex said, that's our message. And it didn't really have a lot of effect, although my program director and management were afraid of it. So that ultimately, you know, we didn't really get fired. They just didn't renew our contract and took us off the air for the last year of the contract. So the second time we left B96, we weren't really fired. It was just 2008 hit. We were each making $1.7 million, and the economy dropped out, and the station's revenue dropped in half. Mancow was making $3 million a year at one time, and they also Steve Dahl was making $1 million. So when 2008 hit and the economy blew up, they also took Steve Dahl off the air but paid out the remainder of his contract, but by taking you off the air, they were able to write the salaries off as a loss. So, had the economy not screwed up, they probably might have kept us and renewed the contract. I mean, Elvis Duran, at age 50, I think, signed a 5-year extension, or maybe even 60, you know, in New York. So, you know, that's the way that played out.
Yeah, it was a vibe changer for me, because it was just like, I hated going to school. I just thought it was so boring. And there were times I would pretend to be sick and I would just listen to you guys till 10, then listen to Brian Middleton and Roxanne and Styles and Roman. Like, it was crazy because, like, I know you pretty well, but it's so weird talking to you because I was like this fourth grader that was like, oh my God, these guys are amazing. But it was just, it's so weird how social media made you guys so accessible, because growing up, I used to try to email you guys, but I mean, you guys are getting so many emails that this interview has been a blast, Eddie.
Well, it's great to, you know, to watch how radio has changed, even if it's not necessarily for the better. But I'm glad, and Jobo kind of, at the show Friday night, we had, instead of coming back out on stage every time, they made like a makeshift radio studio on the left side of the stage as you're looking at it. And we would sit there with our microphones. It looked like kind of like we were doing American Idol. In fact, when George LeMond finished, I said, congratulations, George, you're going through to Hollywood. But while the acts were playing, we kind of looked like dorks just sitting there not doing anything. I thought, this should down the lights on us, because we're sitting there watching and enjoying it. But Jobo leaned over and whispered to me, he goes, I think we were in radio at the perfect time. You know, like watching these acts and the passion from the people in the audience and all that. And I said, yeah. I said, you know, there's passion for Taylor Swift now, but not for the radio hosts so much. Yeah. And it's changed the way you do a show. I mean, there was a time when Robert Murphy always had to show up in a expensive leather jacket and in a limo. You know, and Danny Bonaducci, I'm gonna Valley the Viper. And Johnny B, yeah, baby. And, you know, and Jobo and I, me parachuting into the first summer bash and Jobo riding in on an elephant. Nowadays, they want somebody whose trash cans blew away during the wind last night, just like yours did. You know, they have the same problem with housebreaking their dog that you did. You know, it's not the, hey, guess I had Jennifer Lopez in my hot tub kind of thing anymore, you know.
So it's weird.
That's why someone as real as Hannah is effective, because everybody can relate to her about her dating troubles and, you know, her swiftiness and all that. It's just what you see is what you get.
Eddie, how can people check out your show with Hannah?
You can do any of these star stations I'm on. There's Star 96.7, there's Star 105.5, and there's Star 102.3 on any of the Odyssey, iHeartRadio, or even just their websites. Each one of them's Star96.7.net. But yeah, any of the Googles and stuff, you know, your smart speaker, just say play Star 96.7, 3 to 7 p.m. Central Time. And we also have a lot of our best bits are on Spotify at Eddie Volkman and Hannah B, H-A-N-N-A-H-B. And we have a ton of stuff in interviews with people on there. So, and I'm just Eddie Volkman on most social media, too.
Well, it was either I was on the bus and I had a CD player and I was going between 50 Cent or Lil John or your morning show, or I was on the playground or in my room growing up. But I can't explain to you, Eddie, how much the Eddie and Jobo show meant to me. You guys were just so different than anything I've ever heard. And I got interviewed recently by a Tampa Bay magazine about my life, and I'm going to post it. And in the article, it talked about me growing up, and I mentioned how you guys had a huge impact on me. So thank you so much for the last 50 minutes on my show.
I appreciate it, man. Anytime. And when you come back to town, look me up.
I'm definitely going to be back in August, so I'll definitely message you.
You, by my estimation, you must be 8'4" by now.
Here's the funny part. Here's what I love, Eddie, because people are listening, I'm 6'8½", but I round up to 6'9" on the dating apps because of the number. I have to.
Yeah, all right, yeah. And they go, oh, 6'9", you pervert.
Yeah, or they think I'm lying. These girls will be like, oh, there's no way you're 6'9". And then I meet them in person and they're looking up at me and I'm like, yes, I'm 6'9".
Yeah, you're safer in a radio studio, though, because if you go to a Walmart, they're all like, do you play basketball?
Oh, my God, Eddie, all day. Actually, yeah. It's been less recently, but it's always when I'm not in the mood to talk. It's always when I do morning radio and I'm up at 3 a.m. and it's like 4 a.m. at like a coffee place and I'm getting coffee and it's like, how tall are you? And I'm like, it's 4 a.m.
I know. Well, it's funny because I was hoping when I woke up this morning, my voice was shot.
Yeah.
Because of the Friday night on mic all night and talking to people too. Then I went out to see a live band last night and they were so loud, but I got recognized by like about 7 different people in this bar, and they all wanted to talk about, what are you doing now? There's no marketing. A lot of people don't know. And I go, I'm working out. So it was worse in the bar than it was
yeah.
the show the other night. But I sing in a band, so I'm my voice recovers pretty quickly. So, all right, man. Well, it's great to be on, and of course, post that. I want to see it. I'll repost
it. I will. I'm going to post it in all the B96 groups, too.
Okay, awesome.
Awesome, Eddie. Right, thank you.
Okay,
bye. All right, bye. And that was the one and only Eddie Volkman as he called into Hoppy Hour. Now, if this is your first time hearing my voice, hi, my name is Ryan Hoppy. I grew up in Arlington Heights, Illinois from 1993 till 2014. And then I moved to Cleveland and Tampa Bay. And now I've been in Tampa for the last 9 years. And I have two forms of my podcast, Hoppy Hour. The first one is me interviewing people on radio. I've done over 350 interviews. And also, I have one that sounds kind of like a morning zoo from the 90s, growing up listening to Brandmeier and Eddie and Jobo and Man Cow's Morning Madhouse. So go to every single major platform that has a podcast and search up Hoppy Radio, H-O-P-P-E Radio, and at Ryan Hoppy Radio on all social media. This has been Hoppy Hour. I am your host, Ryan Hoppy, signing off.
Hoppy Hour. Hoppy Hour.